Hey, Ray.
Hey, Jay.
What's shaking?
Nothing. It's a wonderful afternoon.
It is.
How are you? How is it over there?
I feel pretty good. I'm a little, I'm good.
That's good.
Yeah.
It's good to be good.
Everything's nice. Looking forward to an evening of chilling. I'm just going to chill.
Chill.
Later, yeah.
Nice.
How about you?
Yeah, I'm probably going to chill as well.
It'll be chilling.
Chilling.
So we discussed before we got on the record button that there may again not be a specific category.
We were grasping around for one.
Yeah.
But we have not landed on one as of yet, and probably may not by the time this comes to air.
Yeah, it's funny how some of the words seem like they must all tie together, but they don't tie together at all, and that happens sometimes.
Yeah, we're fast and loose sometimes.
Yeah. So this is not a baseball episode at all.
We no. Know
what it is.
That was the one we kicked around. Mm-hmm. Listeners, if you have a category you think it would fit into, let us know. And I'll rename the episode.
For you.
Specifically. But not baseball stuff.
Yeah, so, I mean, if you don't mind, I'll start again.
No, I don't mind one bit.
Because my brain, and I have one. You know what, this week, my first one, well, Rebecca gave me Strike Your Fancy.
Strike Your Fancy, okay.
Yeah, but when I start in those old dusty law books, you begin to realize, your fancy. And Tickle is really the mother load on that one.
That's so, the birthing place.
Yeah. So it's really going to be Tickle Your Fancy.
Tickle My Fancy.
Yeah.
Well.
You know, using this.
Yeah.
The definition is like, how do we use it? Like, I like it.
Delightful or something, right?
Yeah, like it pleases you. It's good.
But I do I picture a tickling, like kind of feeling, like a hoo-hoo-ha. when you use it.
Well, you use the word tickle.
Right, that's what I mean. But it feels like it's one of those kind of like, feel like, well, that was very enjoyable. Ha, how refreshing. Like a tickle my fancy.
I don't know how to take that, but I would have to say that part of your brain,
yeah,
or mind, is connected to some other lives that are concurrently living in the 17th century.
All right.
And know a little bit more about this.
Okay.
And are reacting to that.
All right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, So fancy. It's a funny thing, you know, just etymologically speaking, it really goes back to Greek fantasia and fantasy.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And somehow it turned from fantasy, you know, it offshot from fantasy to fancy. Although, once I reveal a little bit more, I think you can figure out how. Hedgehog cute up in here. So, yeah, so somewhere 15th, 16th century is about where it started to make that transition.
All right.
I don't know how I feel about it. You know, it's always some good with a bad trade-off. Some of the terrible inflictions and lack of treatments and horrible treatments and things like that make that era sound just frightening.
Oh, sure.
But then there were things about that era that just sound great also. Mm. And Samuel Pepys, our friend.
Friend of the pod.
Friend of the pod.
1660s, Samuel Pepys.
Yeah, he's quick with the joke or to light up your smoke. But he's good for things. You know, halfway through lockdown, then I did put the Sam Pepys diary on hold.
It's been a minute since we had any stories, yeah.
Yeah, so I'm about two-thirds through with it, and I got to pick it back up this winter and finish it. One of the things that I realized back then that we researched and saw, there's this Sam Pepys library that exists that you can visit, and it's got all those books he collected in these bookshelves that he had made and all this stuff, and I really do want to see that.
You can go and read them all there. You can't take them out, though.
But you can't take them out.
Yeah, you can read everything in the library while you're in the library, it sounds like.
While you're in
with
there.
Your white gloves,
you have to put
stuff
on some white gloves or something.
Yeah.
In that library, he also collected a bunch of ballads, and they're called Pepys Ballads. And at first read, you think, oh, he wrote them, because he did play some instruments and he kept learning more instruments as he went along in life.
Mm-hmm.
But apparently these were just things he collected so that they wouldn't be lost, you know, and he gathered all these songs and limericks together.
But they weren't specifically written by him.
No.
He is a collection of...
Yeah, it's his collection.
Cool, gotcha.
But we're going to get back to that.
Ooh.
Also, here's another oddity about this word fancy. So fancy meant, you know, in the 1800s, it meant love. You know, if you said you fancied her, it meant you were in love with her, not I like her or I think she's cute or whatever.
Okay.
It was full on love.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think we were just speaking about Kevin Bacon.
Yeah, we were.
And
specifically Footloose.
Footloose.
If anyone cares.
So if you were footloose and fancy free,
yeah,
that meant you were single. You were good to go.
Okay.
You were
got
without
you.
A love interest.
Yeah, yeah, fancy free.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Isn't that something?
That is something indeed. But he's very much in love.
Yeah. Well, they didn't do their homework. They're just using words. And besides, nowadays, it doesn't mean that anymore.
Right.
It did somehow end up weirdly associated with cats. And I have another sort of perverse idea about that.
Cat Fancy magazine?
Cat Fancy and Fancy Feast. Lots of things. This one will go on you.
Okay.
It's going.
Okay.
So,
is it like a lollygagger?
It is a, oh,
my,
yeah.
My.
It is. I mean.
We just follow where the research goes.
We just follow it. When I found this stuff, I thought, oh, Jimmy, I might have to make this one another, even though that last one we made explicit was didn't end up needing to be.
Yeah. We were just cautious.
But if we put the all that cursing we did on those outtakes, yeah. but anyway, let me just say, hey, in American English, it evolved into fancy, which was also kind of correlated with fanny. Okay. In American English, that was your buttocks, but in British English, I'm gonna tell you, you know. Just to tell you, it was, you know, your a coochie, you know, kind of a thing.
You could say vagina.
Yeah. Whatever. I don't know how else to say that.
Sure.
So.
Right. I've heard that.
Right.
Still to this day.
So let's go, huh?
Still to this day. It means that, I believe. Fanny, from what I understand.
And that's okay.
Sure.
Thornley's Longus. 1657, Daphne's seductress directed him to her fancy, the place so long desired and sought. I'm like, good morning, Vietnam.
All right.
Up in here. 1731, Dear Doll is a prude, and I tumbled down, and I tickled her fancy for half a crown. Yeah, see, I got a little limerick here.
Yeah, yeah. Is this from Pepe's Library?
Yeah.
Nice.
This quibbling phrase, I told you I'd get back to it.
Yeah, yeah.
No, Pepe's ballads. And you know, we know he had some dalliances. And
it seems like it was a regular thing. Mr. Pepe's.
This quibbling phrase turns up in Maid's Complaint. This is 1684. See what I mean about people? You know, you thought they were just back there scrubbing clothes in a creek with a board, but they were doing stuff.
Alongside the board scrubbing.
Yeah. Pepe's Ballads 4. My Dame Nancy declare how her master did tickle her fancy with his dildal. Whatever. I got to look up dal.
No,
that's D-O-U-L. And then, you know, the Quaker maid. Oh, we got a couple in here. The Quaker maid was left in the lurch after he had tickled her fancy. Ah, poor girl.
That's... Huh.
But we covered Left in the Lurch.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
We did.
It meant, you know, go to town. But. But.
So, yeah.
It changed along. And so, just like we were saying last week, and I said it last week about lollygag and the whitewashing, when I'm digging in ones that go a little raunchy like this,
yeah,
you tend to find someone along the way throwing up some roadblocks to the raunchy. They want to keep it clean. And I'm like, don't cover it up. Let's just have it all. That's like, why are you doing that?
This is what it is.
This is what it is.
Yeah.
But there are plenty of people that want to stop it. And then it did evolve. As it evolved, Abraham Tucker's 1774, In the Light of Nature Pursued, they talk about some animals that have, vulgar interactions with their fancy. But also, there's a limerick about some army folk. It was a little more twisted in the army folk guys and a sort of a guy named Nancy, and Nancy rhymes with fancy. So there's an old, dare I say, classic limerick, but there's a...
Yeah, an old-timey limerick.
Yeah, a documented limerick.
Yeah.
That, where it was twisted that way. But then there are plenty of documentation that has fancy being used, almost how we just use it today, just to mean liking. And if you were but well awakened out of that spirit of slumber into which your intoxication hath cast you, and out of that pleasant dream in it which hath so tickled your fancy, you would be ashamed and confounded before God and men. So this is this big dissertation about your drinking and your debauchery and you're out of God's light. And this is out of a book from the 1600s, and there are many. I found many book references to tickling fancy that were just speaking about liking it or enjoyment,
yeah,
but without a direct sexual component.
Mm-hmm.
Some that are clearly laid out as double entendre, and then some that are just, like I jumped on first there, just blatant sex.
Yeah. This is all contemporarily happening, though, like the three kind of paths.
Really, 1600s, 1500s, 1600s, and then into the 1700s, where it begins to leave the direct sex one behind.
Mm-hmm.
But no doubt that it was. And then, like I said, a Molly, a Lavender Boy, and a Nancy, Miss Nancy, Nance or Nance Boy. It really took on that sort of derogatory connotation in World War II.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't find enough out about that. But, guys in a war, they're going to just conjure stuff up because they're conjuring. That didn't last long, but it did make you realize that tickling the fancy was still in the mindset of being correlated to sex, regardless of how they rhymed it against Nancy, and what sex Nancy was, is irrelevant.
Right.
Still meant it was thought of as direct sex. So that idea of it stayed alive. It didn't seem to be just a convenient rhyme.
Yeah, I got you.
There's no fun, nice bow that I can bring you home to, but the fact is, it came out of this. There are a lot of blockers in the path that want to say it was never double entendre. It was never sex. It was just, it just meant that you liked it.
You liked somebody.
And that's just a blatant lie. And I don't know why people do that. But how you use it now is how you use it now. And I don't know if in England they still use it to mean, not sure. But I might start using it.
Fancy.
Yeah.
I thought fanny was in use still, like I said, but I'm not sure.
I will bring my next date some sort of little gift and ask her if it tickles her fancy, and then chuckle to myself.
And then say, play this episode.
Yeah.
And we'll laugh together.
Ha ha. So that's what I have. What have you?
Well, after one may have their fancy tickled in the time, they may have to get hitched or want to get hitched.
I see.
You know, maybe you would prefer that.
Yeah.
Get hitched is my phrase.
I worked that out.
Yeah, no, I know. Sorry.
Slow, but...
To get married is what we're saying when we say to get hitched.
Hitch my star to your wagon.
Yeah. I mean, again, not that exactly, but not crazy different.
No.
Hitch... 1440s, H-Y-T-C-H-E is the Middle English. It may come from Middle English, itchen, I-C-C-H-E-N, which starts to mean to move as with jerks or pauses, to stir, then itching, that's what I'm saying, itching means, back to 1200.
Itching to get hitching.
Yeah. It really seems like hitch and itch are siblings at the start. As in a jerky movement or pause, a lot of early definitions of hitch. And I have heard this, I'm not sure if you have, someone with a hitch in their step.
Yes.
Right? That's a limp or hobble, an abrupt movement. This is 1600s. We're kind of using hitch still early on to mean like jerky motions. And yeah, no, I was like, oh, wow. Because sometimes when I hear it, they have a hitch in their step. It's like a little sprightly kick, but people walking with a hitch would walk with some kind of limp, right? In your mind.
Anyway, yes.
When you hear that, right?
Yeah. Like maybe their legs were hitched together.
No, that's, it doesn't start that way, but it becomes that too. There's an actual definition of legs hit, like tied together, that it gets to.
Oh, dang.
But no, you're fine. There's no spoilers. That's all. I wasn't even going to touch on that. That's just side bonus stuff. So to become fastened to catch something, this is 1578, Rembert Duodens, History of Plants, in our special Middle English ways.
Plantes.
Yeah. The leaves end with clasping tendrils, whereby it hitcheth fast and taketh sure hold.
Oh, that wasn't too bad.
No, thank you. I practiced.
Good job.
We're diverting, obviously, from the jerky movements to the take hold to something.
Yeah.
Evidence where hitch is a means by which a rope is made fast can be seen dated back to our sailing days in the 1620s. John Smith is sea grammar, 1627. Hitch is to catch hold of anything with a rope to hold it fast or with a hook, as hitch the fish hook to the anchor's fluke, or tackles into the garnets of the slings.
Wow.
We touched upon fluke with the anchor.
We did.
Yeah.
It was like a fish shape.
Exactly. Kind of thing, the fluke. Yeah. It's the fluke shape that gives us that. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, the fin to the fin to the fluke, back to the fluke, back to the fin. It was like a self. You're like, what? It carries a sense of, it passes through, the means by which a rope is made fast. And also in this time, sort of 1700s, it's, has a sense of obstruction, like that was a hitch in our plan, you know, that went off without a hitch, or there was hitching in that, you know what I mean?
But isn't that similar to the herky-jerky walk?
Exactly. Yeah. The obstruction, it's sort of a following definition on there, yeah. Where I think this, our modern day to get hitched from phrase kind of hails, is an 1835-ish, probably, you know, somewhere in the 1800s, there was a phrase that folks used to hitch horses together, as in to agree, get on well, act in harmony, not in reference to any relationships at first. 1835, Captain McClintock's Atkinson's casket, after he poked his fist in my face one election, we never hitched our horses together. So he's saying after he, you know, sassed me, I never wanted to join up and work with him. I never wanted to hitch my horse, our horses together, to work together, to be partners or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
sassing me.
Right. I don't like that. A year later, probably similar times, the same thing. The idea of it relating to marriage sort of kind of kicks off. This is some more of our the sayings and doings of Samuel Slick of Slickville, 1836, by T.C. Halliburton. They, man and wife, don't hitch their horses together well at all. Meaning that they haven't gotten a good working team relationship together.
Yeah.
Josiah Holland in 1857 tosses out, now and then a feller gets hitched to a hedgehog of a wife.
Hedgehog cute.
Hedgehog
What's
cute.
That supposed yeah. to mean?
I just, you know, he got hitched to the hedgehog of a wife. I don't know. Maybe she's super cute. But this idea of hitching really kind of comes back to early-ish civilization using animals for work, perhaps after we domesticated them and working farms, even beforehand as pack animals. You would hitch animals together to make them collectively stronger as they could help, you know, carry heavier loads if they were tied together.
Horsepower.
Horsepower, exactly. And this goes back, I mean, honestly, we've been, I can't even calculate, 10,000 years, I guess, is our civilization, like I always like to say, 12,000 years or so, since we've been like kind of farming, domesticated.
Yeah.
But it kind of follows that same path. I think it, you know, the hitch horses together is a nice mother phrase that helps it get to getting hitched and married.
Dang.
Yeah.
Well, what about this hedgehog?
It's just Josiah Holland is just offering up some advice in the Bay Path, a tale of New England colonial life.
All right.
1857.
I like that.
Yeah. It was, I enjoyed the itch, like, parallels, personally, when I was researching it. And that itch means jerky motion, as in when you scratch something, or whatever. Maybe we'll do that one.
Itch?
Yeah, I'm saying.
We'll do the itchy and scratchy show. But hey, Ray.
Hey, Jay.
I wonder if any of our listeners are in the advertising business.
Maybe.
You think?
Perhaps it's not, the chance is not zero.
No. I mean, you know, I'm just talking a little bit about what we do here at Big Science Music, you know. We work with advertising, radio, television, we write music, we sound design. Yes. What else we do around here?
We record podcasts.
Well, we record podcasts.
Ideas, brand things. We do, sounds for any kind of digital thing, webs, sites.
And content, yeah.
Content, sound, that's a good word, content.
No, digital thing. It works.
Digital things.
It's pretty good, too. ADR, we do those.
We do
Hollywood
ADR.
People come in. They read those lines to films. If you're in the film business, you need some ADR, looping.
That's
we're here for you.
We're here.
Yeah.
Voiceover records, whatever you need.
Yeah, we're here. Yeah. So Big Science Music, bigsciencemusic.com. You can email or call, and we will take care of business.
Yeah, TCB.
That's how we do. We're like Bachman Turner Overdrive.
Where kick-ass is status quo.
Where kick-ass. Yeah, how about that?
Yeah.
That's a long-living motto.
Yeah, we should bring that. We should dust that one off and throw it up somewhere.
Yeah, because right now it's just rolling with that best kung fu or whatever.
Right.
I think people just go, what? I think martial arts is violent, and I'm opposed to so we throw people off with that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anything you need. We can make karate sounds.
So that's Big Science Music. Come on down.
Come on down.
All right. So, yeah, these are incongruent. Plant. Is mine. But not plant like the green thing in the yard.
Not a green oxygen-creating thing, plant.
Right.
Living plant.
A plant. Giuseppe. Works down at the plant.
Gotcha.
You know, the
physical
place.
Factory.
Physical plant.
A physical plant, which is, I love that. I love the physical plant folder.
Yeah. But wow. Wowie. Wow, wow, wow. I mean, this one was really tricky to research. Like, nearly.
It seems hard to search.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is.
Right.
Glad you recognize that.
No, I see what you're saying.
A young tree, vine, shrub, or herb planted or suitable for planting. That's a funny thing. When we do it all the time, you turn the verb becomes the noun, or the noun becomes the verb. Mm-hmm. I plant a tree, but now it is my plant, you know?
I would say I planted a plant.
Right, which is like, what? Like, what is that?
Well, why? Why? Who could come here and possibly learn our language? I mean, who could really learn it?
Hadn't have been two.
Right.
And it was force fed. So a tomato plant, you call it a tomato plant.
Right.
Is it planted? Yeah, it's planted, but I'm going to replant it. So, it's got problems.
Yeah.
Yeah, but there is a definition in the big book of definitions that goes as follows. Screen one, this program is rated R. The land, buildings, machinery, apparatus, and fixtures employed in carrying on a trade or an industrial business.
So, machinery and stuff?
Well, I mean, here's the thing.
Okay.
A factory or workshop for the manufacture of a particular product, the total facilities available for production or service, yada, yada, yada. But that's all well and good.
Right.
But why?
Why? Right, I hear you.
There was some stuff I came across that I was pretty excited about for a minute. But then, you know, you have to kind of step back. I try not to say, I really love this one, so this is it. I'll tell you if I really love it and yeah. I'm going to jam it home to say this is it. I'll tell you I'm doing that. But digging deeper, it didn't feel like there was anything to give me something solid to hold on to. But, you know, Plantation, on the plantation, you had places where Southern farmers would start building things and use their slaves to create other things, whether they were canning food or preparing the cotton and baling it out into, you know, smaller, whatever. And there are people that speculate that plant came from plantation, from that form of organized work structure.
I see.
I don't really think after considerable digging that that is it.
It doesn't dig up enough.
It's a respectable speculation.
I see the respeculation. Respeculation.
I'm going to write that down. And then most other diggers, he's a good digger, Marge. Most other diggers like us.
Pick up, stupid.
would have stopped. I looked into a few people that said, no, this is it. It's you set up shop. The building is planted in the earth. You plant yourself here, and this is where we're going to work. I go, yeah. That's all right, but that doesn't explain everything because my house is planted too. Why isn't the house a plant?
Yeah, don't call it a plant, right?
It's not, is it?
House plant.
No. See what we did there? Hoochie mama.
Yeah, that's unrewarding.
It's not only unrewarding, it's damn lazy.
Yeah.
Let me judging people.
Fuck me if it's the judge, you're stupid. Oh, your dumb culture or whatever.
Yeah. So here's a really odd definition that kept creeping up. It would be phrased differently in different books, but they are all trying to say the same thing. But at the same time, there were some discrepancies in how they define things. Let me bring this home for you.
Okay.
Well, not home. But let me talk to you about this aspect.
Really?
Because if you work down at the plant, what else might you say? He works down at the...
Factory.
Man, yeah. Right off the bat. Factory.
First one out of the gate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
Sure.
Let me read one of these for you.
Okay.
Plant is a combination of processes where there may not be an apparent indication of the input materials versus the output. Power plant has an input of coal and water, basically, but the output is electricity. There has no apparent link with the input. Same with a steel plant. Input is iron ore, manganese, coke, etc., whereas output is metallic iron, steel, blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm.
Factory, on the other hand, is a place where inputs and outputs would be physically quite different, but not chemically different. In a factory, a lot of physical and mechanical processing would be undertaken, but no major chemical change. Yeah. Tire, engine, sheet, components, instruments, cable, etc. goes in, and output is a car.
Yeah.
All of the input items can be individually identified in the car, but their physical shape and property may be different.
Yeah.
So I read arguments about plant versus factory a bunch of different times, yeah, and actual stated definitions not unlike this one.
Yeah.
Another one of the rules that are laid down about what a plant is, and I touched on it early on, a factory is a building, but a plant somehow is, it's the whole array of buildings and structures and tools and equipment.
It's like almost like a compound.
Like a compound.
Like a physical, like space-wise. Okay. Yeah. I like where this is.
It's a gray line, but...
Yeah.
But here's a one little tasty bit you could throw in there. Because if I plant in my garden, a tomato plant, it grows things, right? It keeps growing. It keeps making a thing.
Right.
And you keep going to get it from the plant.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
And I can't help but think that there's more of that in this idea. And it correlates.
Yeah, the definition.
To the definition.
Very closely.
Yeah. But no one says it. Really? So I'll say it.
Yeah.
I just did. So that, I think there's more to it than we planted the building in the ground and it's a plant. Like that word came about.
Yeah.
A little bit more organically and has a little bit more metamorphosis cachet in it than that.
I like that.
Yeah. But we'll never be 100% positive, will we? But it's a tough one to research. I think I said that already 3 times. Someone should send me something nice, some nice chocolates for all the hard work I did. But that's what I got for you. You don't have to send chocolates.
When was the date of the definitions?
You gave? They run a gamut, and some are from 19th century, and some from early 20th century. There is,
I guess, since we were doing manufacturing, right? They wouldn't have called anything before that.
It was an old one that I found that was late 1700s.
Yeah,
yeah,
that's cool. I like that the plant has a definition like that, and the factory has a definition of what that is. That's awesome. Like, there's a rubber plant, but there's a tire factory.
Right. We would just use them kind of interchangeably.
I did. You asked, and I totally did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's a plant.
Is that just me? I feel like really, like, that was awesome.
Oh, I'm glad, because like, I was frustrated that I couldn't find more and be more absolute, but there's just not absolute out there. So what have you?
I feel like I can't perform after that.
That's what she said.
I have the words low ball. Low ball, one word, low ball, low hyphen ball, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Low ball.
Because you don't know how you're going to write that. It's one of those things.
Yeah.
The animals talk and sing.
And this one, we'll just get to its simplest definition. Offer a deceptively or unrealistically low price, right?
Something. Yeah, well, low. Uh-huh.
So what is a low balling? What is low balling? From a buyer's perspective.
Undercutting.
It's when the buyer sees an item, say for $5, and the buyer says to the seller, yeah, I can do $1.75, hoping that the seller will at least come down a little bit from $5 to perhaps $4 to whatever number they do. That's from the buyer's perspective.
Yeah.
So from a selling perspective, lowballing is the act of offering you a special price, a low price, to get you to agree to a sale, to sign a contract. And then when it's time to execute or collect on that price, they say there has been a mistake and it's going to cost you more, actually. And by this time, the buyer has already agreed to the lower terms. And in our minds, our human brains, they are easily manipulated into saying, well, whatever, you know, it's only $200 more or whatever it ends up being. So we tend to not raise a fuss and go along with, sure, okay, we're getting such great features for a low price, surely you'd pay a little more for those same great features. You did just agree to pay for them for a slightly lower price, so obviously you want them, right?
Yeah.
So that's a low-balling kind of play from a seller's perspective, and they can take advantage of our brains because they're dumb. Okay, remember, everybody, our brains are dumb. 1957, though, Popular Science, the May issue, some dealers slip customers the low ball this way. Signing a contract and paying a deposit are sometimes no protection against finding out when you return to pick up your car that the new car price has suddenly risen and the trade-in offer dropped.
Yeah, that's just cheating.
Yeah, I never thought much more into low ball offers beyond the buying side. But of course, people would do that all the time, I'd imagine. It happens to us all the time without us knowing. Now, I'm like, God darn it.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, I don't know if we think of calling it the same thing.
It's a type of sales tactic. It is defined as this.
It's different from bait and switch.
Yeah, because I think that implies you're changing out more than the cost of something. Like you're actually getting a different service.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah, it is.
I did not see that hop into this from a peripheral. 1960, a lowball price. This is the Journal Business magazine. A lowball price is one below the actual price the dealer will sell the item for. And then Popular Mechanic, not to be outdone by Popular Science. We rarely lowballed shoppers and never bushed a buyer by charging a higher price than we agreed on.
Bushed a buyer.
B-U-S-H-E-D. Why is lowballing something that we say for this? Price switchery. For bartering, for bartering, whatever.
I don't know. Does that have anything to do with physical ball?
The true answer is that no one knows. But there's many little tiny tidbits that I came across that I thought were interesting. The first of such kind of brings us down to railroad days. So on the side of the track, where one could see very visibly from a distance, the engineer could see this sign on the side of the road, side of the track. And this signpost is like a big wooden T frame with I'm going to call them balls on either side, largish things attached to pulleys. So if a train from a distance sees the ball near the track up high to the top of the T, they are highballing, which means they are free to keep on booking through the wherever the sign is, the signal is.
Yeah,
you can speed up. People call. There's the high ball. It means to take off, to speed up. And then if the ball was low on the ground, you would stop.
That's like a red light.
That's like a red light.
Low ball, red light.
Yeah. The term high ball is certainly found in railroad jargon and in other things. The term low ball doesn't seem to be a term that they used, even in the fact that the ball was lower. People tossed it out as a possibility. It only seemed to happen for maybe a decade or so, those types of signals. And it sounds like they were only used in certain parts of the country.
We got to get rid of this ball system.
Yeah. I mean, it created the high ball, which does mean to book it. I don't think it didn't last, but there is no...
But then it translated over into a tasty beverage.
Right, the highball glass, which a highball is a cocktail.
Yeah.
And a lowball is just the booze.
Really?
Yeah, that's what I saw.
So if you're drinking something straight, it's a lowball.
It's a lowball. You get a lowball glass. Although, but they still had it like Manhattans in those when they were cocktails. I saw the highball glass was for, it said like liquors, soda water, and et cetera. And the lowball glass said for liquor and ice or nothing is what I read. Yeah. So neat or iced on the rocks is a low ball is what I understand.
All right.
And a high ball is a cocktail.
Yeah, yeah.
The next theory is kind of in baseball, a low ball pitch is a pitch.
Oh yeah, I've heard that.
That a pitcher will pitch. I read about this. I'm not a baseball expert. I could be I could be wrong. But I read, it sounds like, yes, you want your pitcher to be able to throw strikes, of course, you know, yes. But you also want them to be able to throw pitches that the batters will swing at and will cause things to happen.
Sure.
That the batter doesn't want to happen.
That's their job.
Right. So the low ball apparently is an important one because it generally, it seems like it will get the batter to swing. And even if they swing and hit it, it's going to maybe ground out, hit the ball. It's going to do a foul. It's going to do a weird thing that's not going to be helpful to them.
Right.
So you want to throw the low balls as well as the strikes to get the batters to swing at stuff. And I'm like, okay. Like you want to throw out a price to get the buyer to swing at something. And then when they do swing at it, it's not what they expected to happen. Again, this is just me. There's no one saying this besides me.
Yeah, it seems like.
1866, Daily National Intelligencer. Crane knocked a low ball to shortstop. Just a literal use of a baseball term, low ball. I also saw in my research that card game, it can relate to card games. In a game called Cribbage, you are playing, but essentially if you get to the point score, you have lost. The top score, it seems like for two players is 61 and for a group is 121, I think. So if you are the player that gets all the points and you get to those end numbers, you are a low baller and you have lost. In a poker, it's also a type of hand where the card order's values are reversed. So the high, like the face cards and stuff are worth less than the two, threes, and fours. Again, kind of get it. Okay, you're playing cribbage. You've been lowballed. You're the lowballer. You won. You got all the points, but you've lost. Again, me just kind of tossing some stuff together.
Who's playing cribbage?
I'm not sure. I've never played cribbage or lowball poker, which is called Razz as well. RAZZ.
Cribbage.
Yeah. Okay. There's a lot of folks that think it relates to the railroads.
That only lasted 10 years.
I came across it. It was only in New England and Erie, PA here, from like 1830 to 1840.
Yeah, that's very esoteric.
To get back to the psychology, this is just fun facts time. To the psychology of the low ball sale kind of thing. There was a study done in 1978. Caldini, Cacioppo, Bassett, and Miller study. They asked a group of first-year psychology students to volunteer to be a part of a cognition study. The researchers said, here, we're going to meet at 7 a.m., everybody. I'm telling you guys, if you're committed, it's a 7 a.m. gig, show up. Who's in? So 31% of those people were like, okay, I'll sacrifice my time and wake up early to help you do your study. And then the second group, the people were asked to join the study. Come join our study. But they were not told what time of day it would be.
What the hell?
So of those folks that had no idea what time it would be, 56% agreed to take part. And then after they agreed, they were told, oh, by the way, it's at 7 a.m. And if you want, you can back out. If you'd like. It seems like 95% of the lowball group, the people who were not told the time, committed and then were told the time, 95% of those folks showed up for the 7 a.m. appointment. And only 79% of the people who knew what time it was agreed to it and then showed up. 79% of those people agreed to show up.
What's that learn us, that the lowballing tactic works?
It works. It's us. It's our brain failure. I mean, we've made a commitment and we feel like we can't change that, honor that or something. Yeah, it is cognitive dissonance, essentially. We create a cognitive dissonance in our minds.
Hmm.
Yeah.
For me, closer to that sort of pride thing, just like when I bought that $75 water bottle holder that I thought was going to be $12.95, but when I get to the checkout line, he tells me it's $75. I have to act like, of course, it's $75 and buy it, right?
Well, this is that you're like, well, I wanted it 10 minutes ago, so I must want it still.
I didn't want it at $75,
no.
But my pride wouldn't let me back out of it.
Right.
Somebody's going to tell you, no, it's also 7 a.m. You're like, yeah, I know.
I committed, so of course
I am. Yeah, who are you
right.
talking to?
It is. I mean, I think that is, yeah.
You think I can't get up at 6?
1978. This was in a paper, The Mindlessness of Ostensibly Thoughtful Action, The Role of Placebic Information in Interpersonal Interactions.
Yeah.
Rolls off the tongue. Like most research papers.
Yeah, I like placebic information.
Yeah. Yeah, no, our brains are, there are things that do not function with helpful intent.
The brain, the mind.
It fails.
Placebo. I mean, placebos work in medicine.
Sure.
Why? Because your mind tells you took the drug and it's going to work.
Yeah.
And so your mind... It's all in your mind.
Thought creates reality.
thought creates reality.
It's just how it rolls.
You know how I handle these people on eBay that try to lowball me?
I do.
I tell them what? I will set this thing on fire and send you a video of it burning before I sell it to you for that price.
It does bring me a kind of joy.
That's the way to handle a
lowball. Really takes the wind out of the sails.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's lowballing.
That is lowballing. Hey. That's got to be traditional.
Right? We can do that. Mm-hmm. That's okay.
Yeah. Anything. Yeah. Dig it.
Yeah.
So that was 4 incongruent congruencies.
Yeah. Another episode for our listeners to enjoy.
Yeah. Or.
And let us know if you do enjoy, or if perhaps you may not enjoy it as much.
Yeah.
We would appreciate ratings. That'd be awesome. Be helpful.
All that stuff. Contact with us.
Yeah.
Any kind of way.
Yeah. Tell people to listen would also be awesome.
Man, or sharing on any social media that you feel your heart allows you to.
Exactly. You follow your hearts.
And that's another episode.
Yeah.
We'll see you next time. I'm Jay.
And I'm Ray.
We're not idioms. Oh, you did a little singing.
Give it a shot.
Yeah, no, it's good.
Whole Nine Yards is written, recorded, and produced by Big Science Pods. Learn more at wholenineyards.org or contact Whole Nine Yards by emailing heyyou@wholenineyards.org. That's heyyou@wholenumber9yards.org. Whole Nine Yards theme music composed by Big Science Music.